Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back, everybody, in this Monday afternoon. You talk about one of the stories that we discussed extensively in a great detail. It's about a month ago, and for all the valid reasons. Andy Mannix is our next guest, a brilliant reporter for the Star Tribune. Andy's with us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. I'm going to read from Andy's story from April 27th in the Star Tribune. And this should matter to people who are paying close attention to the city of Minneapolis, policing Minneapolis, and really policing across the country. This is from Andy's story about a month ago. The Minneapolis Police Department has engaged in a pattern of racial discrimination in violation of the state's civil rights law over the past decade, enabled by several political administrations failing to hold problem officers accountable, according to a scathing report published Wednesday by the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. So that's about a month ago. Then I'm reading Andy over the weekend, and it says this. The Minneapolis City Attorney's Office says it's been unable to independently verify some of the most damaging findings in the recent Department of Rights investigation into Minneapolis police. In an email, the mayor of Minneapolis and the city council members, to the mayor and city council members, Deputy City Attorney Eric Nielsen said his office reviewed approximately 15,000 pages of documents and did not find any material proving that MPD systematically targeted black leaders, black organizations, and elected officials without a public safety objective. So, Andy, as you know better than I, they're looking for this information to back up what the Human Rights Agency has alleged. Why so far has Rebecca Lucero and her organization been unwilling to provide that information, and how rare is that?
That's a great question. I wish I had a clearer answer. Basically what we've been trying to get these records as well over the past month at the Star Tribune. What they've told us is that they want that, you know, the investigation was about a pattern in practice. So they want, you know, it's not about any individual misconduct or any individual officer's behavior, and they want to keep the conversation at that high level. That said, this everything about this investigation is unusual, just because, you know, we're at this moment that I don't think Minneapolis has ever been at, on this civil rights and policing conversation. Certainly we've never seen this kind of news come out of the state Minnesota Department of Human Rights before. I don't know that they've ever done a pattern and practice investigation, especially of this magnitude and with these kind of damning findings. The idea that someone is, you know, one government entity is investigating another, they make these, you know, extremely troubling findings, and they don't tell them, you know, where the specifics lie. I think that is incredibly unusual.
I think that's a good way to state it. Again, right from your story, unlike law enforcement agencies, the Human Rights Department operates under special data laws that gives the commission discretion over what records are made available to the public. I don't doubt in any way, Andy, the amount of time the Human Rights Department put in hundreds and hundreds of hours and powerful, and just to use the word you and your colleagues use, scathing accusations. But I don't fault you as an outlet, the public, the city of Minneapolis say, okay, now give us the proof. If we're going to try to change this, whatever role we can play, if obviously you have a Department of Justice investigation also, we want to see it ourselves. And if it's just trust us, it's in there, that's just going to lose a lot of credibility with a lot of people.
Yeah, I've said as much to the Human Rights Department. You know, when a government entity says, "Well, just take our word for it," know, that's not the high level of transparency that as a news organization we're advocating for. You know, again, that's not to say that these records don't exist. And I don't think the city is saying they don't exist either. They're just saying they haven't been able to find them. And you know, again, it's like you say, you know, quoting from the story there, when, you know, when there's a the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, you know, investigates the shooting of somebody by police and they decide not to charge, we still get to inspect those records and see everything the police saw. And you know, we get to do a story about those that kind of, you know, shows the public what, you know, we're allowed to show them everything that went into this decision, and the public can decide whether or not the right decision on charging was made. The law is different for specifically the State Department of Human Rights. They don't have to release this stuff, but they can. We think they can. Public records advocates we talked to said they think they can. The law is kind of vague. It's weak, but it does give them a certain amount of discretion. And we think that this falls under the discretionary you know, leeway that they have to be able to release records that would promote public trust.
So here's more from the attorney with the city from your story. Again, Andy Mannix with us. This is what the Human Rights Department found in their investigation of the city, which was staggering. It was frightening. For a lot of people, you know what it was? It was validation. We've known this for a long time. And then it was, what's going to happen next? Well, now the city's saying, okay, we're taking this serious. Jacob Frey, the mayor, the day came out and said it's repugnant. It's horrific. But now without the details, part of what the city attorney is saying, our team was shocked by the allegation report regarding covert social media. Again, these made-up accounts targeting black individuals without any proof of what was going on. And if in fact this occurred, it needs to be addressed immediately. To adequately advise you, our clients, and fulfill our professional obligation as your legal counsel, we must have accurate and complete information about this issue. This is, again, the lawyer to the mayor and the city council. I thought it was interesting in your story, Andy, where the Human Rights Department spokesman, Taylor Putz, said to you that the office planned to move the negotiations forward. This is the city and the rights department talking, but he did not address the records and the question. That's a pretty good dodge, right?
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, this kind of broke. You know, we heard about that this letter was sent, and we were able to get a copy of it like late Friday. But for weeks, we've been trying to engage the Minnesota Department of Human Rights on, you know, more specifics to these records, because, you know, they raise a lot of questions. You know, not just for us, but for the people who were mentioned as targets of the spying.
For sure.
So we've been trying to engage them on this for weeks and haven't really gotten much, you know, interest in them sitting down with us and telling us more about this. So yeah, suddenly, you know, for Friday afternoon, we reach out to them and say, well, we're getting ready to publish this story. And so they send kind of a typical government non-statement statement where they say, well, correct, you know, we think that our work is important and we're going to keep going, you know, forward with these meetings, even if the city isn't, but don't actually answer the central question to my inquiry, which was, why can't you share these records? You know, why can't you tell us more about what these records are? Why is it that the city is saying, I mean, here's the thing, is the city owns these records, right? They, you know, in theory, these are records of what the Minneapolis Police Department is doing that are, you know, private investigatory data that the Minnesota Department of Human Rights inspected for as part of their investigation. But it's like the city has these records in theory, and they say they've gone through, you know, 15,000 of them and haven't been able to find this yet. So why is that? And yeah, like you say, kind of a classic dodge of a, you know, again, this is the kind of response that we often get from a government spokesperson. It's not extremely satisfying.
No, and in this case, it's really to two places. It's you as a member of the media, and it's also to the city. Along with reaching out to you, we reached out to Human Rights Commissioner Rebecca Lucero, to the shock of no one. We didn't even get a response at all. I assume you've tried to get a hold of her also, and that has not happened so far.
Yeah, like I said, we've been trying to engage with them. We've made a strong case that, especially where the conversation is at right now with policing, you know, there needs to be more transparency for people to trust the findings of this report, right? Like every time I write about this report, I get 10 voicemails from, you know, people who say that we're fake news and this report was put together by activists and et cetera. And you know, again, that's just a reflection of how divided I think a lot of people are on issues of law enforcement. But I tried to, I in fact attached many of those voicemails in my email to them. And I said, you know, in order to promote more trust in your findings, you know, we think you need to be more transparent. And, you know, they really haven't given us the time of day to have a discussion about that. They just said our mind remains unchanged. So I would love to know more about why. Like I said at the beginning of our conversation, though, it's, you know, that all they've indicated is they want this to remain at this high level of a pattern and practice, not just be about one act of misconduct, about one officer's behavior. You know, and that makes sense to me. But again, as a journalist, what I'm never gonna say makes sense is you know, less transparency in the face of a lot of questions and you know, more scrutiny. Sunshine is the best disinfectant, whatever idiom you want to use. You know, where we think that we and the public should be able to look at these records. And you know, first of all, now there's this kind of vague question of if they exist, I think, being posed by the city's actions here. Again, they've never said to me, we don't think these exist. They just say, we can't find them, so we can't really continue this negotiation.
Sure.
But you can see how people are going to take that and say, well, they made it all up. And that's going to kind of sow this distrust that a lot of people are looking for, because they, you know, there are a certain amount of people in Minneapolis and Minnesota and the United States that want to think that these allegations aren't true. So giving them,
sure,
I think, any kind of ammunition is, you know, it's people, they want, you know, there are certain people out there who don't want to take these allegations seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, brilliant reporting as always, Andy. Thanks for the time. Love to have you on again. And we appreciate it. And we'll be paying close attention.
Okay. Anytime. Thank you.
That is Andy Bannix. We're going to be up against the clock when Adam joins and with Dan. I want to get more into this, and I want your reaction to this story, because this is big. I mean, how many times have we all talked Minneapolis, policing, safety, what's really going on? Now the Human Rights Division saying, just trust us. Just trust. They might be 100% right. Show the proof. It's very simple. Back in moments.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.